You're tuned into Apex Express on KPFA, bringing you an Asian and Pacific Islander experience from the Bay and around the world. I'm Tara Darabji, kicking it with you tonight. And we are in conversation with Aisha Matu. She's the editor of Salam Love. It's a new anthology of American Muslim men on love, sex, and intimacy. The anthology will be released in February and brings together the true stories of 22 Muslim men talking about love, betrayal, loyalty, faith, and more. Stereotypes about Muslim men in America have flourished in the post-9/11 context. Salam Love gives Muslim American men a chance to share their stories in their own words. We are joined in studio and on the line by contributor Sam Pierstorf and editor Aisha Matu. Sam was a poet laureate from California, and his publications include Growing Up in Someone Else's Shoes. Aisha Matu was also a co-editor of Love Inshallah, along with Nora Masnavi. Love Inshallah was featured globally by media, including the BBC, New York Times, Washington Post, and The Guardian. Welcome both to Apex Express.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. I'm super excited about the anthology and just to be able to have read it all. There's something about love stories that you get them in your hand and you just keep turning the pages. So Aisha, I wanted to start with you. Why did you decide to create, you know, it's interesting, we have two Muslim American identified women creating an anthology and that platform for men to share their stories.
It began in a really personal space, which is I have a 3.5-year-old son, and I have worked in women's human rights my whole life and had no idea what to do with a son. And I became really interested in issues of American masculinity, just thinking about how to raise a compassionate and kind man. The other aspect of it was we had Love Inshallah out, which was 25 American Muslim women sharing their search for love. We had created this wonderful platform for people to come forward and share their stories. And we really felt strongly that we wanted to share that platform with American Muslim men and invite them to participate as a way of marking them as allies, partners, our community members, working together on these issues that affect us as Muslims and Americans. And also, we were just being hounded by men who wanted to be part of the story.
Really? So yes. You got a lot of response from your anthology?
We did. They kept saying, where are our stories? And we were sort of like, please, men don't talk about these issues. But we kept getting emails and being stalked at dinner parties and online. And we finally said, okay, give it to us.
And did they?
Yes, they did. It was a really compressed time frame. So the first book was about 5 years from concept to publication, and this was 6 months.
Wow.
It meant we had to do a lot of outreach. We did have men who were totally ready to get on board, but it was really about making sure that as many men from diverse backgrounds and communities heard about it and were able to write within that short time frame.
And within the Muslim American men communities that you're outreaching to, which particular communities did you find you had to sort of nudge and hold the hands and really encourage to participate?
That's a great question. So what we found with both anthologies was that we really had to make a very strong statement that everyone was included and welcome. Because when we just say American Muslims, some people who, for example, might be from the LGBTQ community or might be from a more secular perspective may be afraid that they won't be completely welcome or that their voices are not welcome at the table. So in our outreach, we specifically stated, you know, Muslims from all perspectives, and then we said Orthodox, cultural, secular, wherever you are on that relationship line, however you view yourself, we really want to hear from you.
And in terms, I know one of the realities and hopes of this anthology is to really provide a context for and voice for American Muslim men. What are the main stereotypes that Muslim men are up against in America?
The two main ones that I feel are they are oppressive of women and they are terrorists. And there seems to be no other narrative possible for American Muslim men or Muslim men in general. And so we felt, as American Muslim women who had created this platform, that it was really important to give them space to talk about issues not only Muslim men don't generally have space to talk about, but men in general, American men in general, don't have space to talk about intimacy, love, romance, all of these issues that are so integral to our lives and are so apparent in these stories as something that deeply, deeply enriches their life, confuses them, something that they pursue.
And I think that was one of the unique thing about the collection was the vulnerability in the pieces. And Sam Pierstorf, I want to bring you into the conversation. Your piece definitely touches on both the realities and the stereotypes in your journey from a young adolescent to meeting and finding your wife. Growing up in America as a mixed race identified young man from a Muslim background, what were some of the main stereotypes that you have faced?
You know, I was sort of lucky in a particular way because I was a second born. So my name was Sam growing up, and it's not short for Samir or anything. So and I take after my dad's side, who is he's white and from Kentucky. So my complexion is lighter. My brother experienced it much worse. His name was he was first born. His name Ahmed, and he had dark, you know, curly hair and dark features and much more Syrian-born, you know, looks. So, you know, growing up, the kids would tease him instead of saying, you know, they would say, amen, you know, as a sort of religious little prostration they would do and tease him about, you know, just being an other. We didn't celebrate Christmas. So that kind of sucked. My kids are going through that right now, just sad about all these gifts. So growing up, you know, was not hard for me. It was harder for my brother, and we got into many little fights, you know, and we'd get some slurs. He'd get some slurs like sand nigger. You know, this was pre 9/11, but this was
Gulf War.
Huh?
That was during the Gulf Wars, right?
Right, right. A little, yeah. And so there was still, and there was, there, you know, there's still a lot of anger and frustration and ignorance about the faith. And I think for me, the hardest part was more silly than anything, and that was my mom just did not want us ever talking to girls. So I would deal more with, you know, being called gay or, you know, a sissy or what's your problem? How come, you know, you don't talk to girls? And I'd get, you know, beaten with a wooden spoon when a girl called or something. And so that kind of stuff was more toxic than any real terrorist stereotype.
And Sam, in terms of your piece, it's called Soda Bottles and Zebra Skins. You have a little portion that you're going to share with us.
Yeah. Well, sure. So I was just going to take a little excerpt growing up. This sort of is a little bit of a love journey. But in fifth grade, this is where I'll start. By fifth grade, the back burner could no longer contain the flames of my parents' marital problems, and they split up. Our home went up in smoke, poof, gone. My father moved an hour away, westward toward the ocean, Costa Mesa, California, while my mother tried her best to raise two boys alone in the desert of Riverside County with all of the might left in her four-foot olive frame and Arabic accent. She jarred my brother and I awake for dawn prayers and chauffeured us to the mosque on Fridays in her seat beltless 1962 Studebaker while she tied her hijab in the rearview mirror and asked my brother to steer. Above all else, she taught us the five essential pillars of Islam. 1, believe in Allah and his final prophet. 2, pray 5 times a day. 3, don't look at girls. 4, don't speak to girls. 5, don't think about girls. Girls more than alcohol and pork were haram. Hell was the tip of my mother's wooden spoon as she chased me around when girls called the house wanting to know why they had my number. She yelled about religion and temptation, how kissing spread disease and French kissing made babies. God's anti-girlfriend stance was way too unfair and exceedingly complicated. But my first crush was simple and powerful, Amy McKiernan. Every day I watched her on the playground, the sun in her blonde curls, her perfect pink-lipped smile. My heart was bursting every time Amy McKiernan pranced across the blacktop. My heart was not bursting with love for a deity that I could not see or touch or smell. Amy smelled like citrus, like rose petals, like love. One day after school, Amy and I circled behind the school's baseball dugout and nuzzled against each other. Her lips met mine. It was quick, innocent. For a moment, I thought it would conjure the devil, but nothing happened. Just a spark that set fire to my heart. It felt like a tiny piece of heaven.
It's the voice of Sam Pierstorf reading from Soda Bottles and Zebra Skins, one of the stories in Salaam Love, an anthology of Muslim American men. And Sam, one of the things in your story, you really talk about your mother's real sheer force around not talking to girls,
mm-hmm.
and coupling that with your religious experience as a Muslim, you yourself now have children,
mm-hmm.
and you're raising them Muslim.
Yes.
So how are you handling that?
you know,
does your wife have a wooden spoon?
Yeah. Yeah. No, my wife and I, you know, we're I think much more progressive. It's less of a taboo. You know, I'm going to discourage as much as I can a lot of, you know, the relationship stuff that comes with males and females growing up. But, you know, if my son's one of his very good friends is an 11-year-old girl, he's an 11-year-old boy, and you know, they play Minecraft together online, and sometimes they study together. And, you know, I'm just not I don't personally plan on making it a big taboo. You know, I think when prom comes around and stuff, we'll have to debate that. But you know, I'm far less strict in that particular way as my mom was, and I don't know if it'll backfire. I think knowing what I know now, as this anthology and the previous one sort of unmasks not just Islamic stereotypes on the outside, but I think internally there are very serious stereotypes in how we see each other. And I like these anthologies because they just sort of rip the mask off that and you go, wow, these people have as many problems as every other kid in America. We just don't talk about it. We sort of retain this illusion that everybody's so righteous and pious and perfect. And as I get older, I realize that's not the case. And my mom's strictness maybe led me to do more things wrong than probably, you know, a more secular parent who's just, you know, allows me to do things. I would have been maybe a safer kid growing up.
Who knows, right, though?
Yeah.
I mean, I had a lax mom, and I rode the edge on certain things as well. You know, it's each of us finds that edge. And
right, right. And but I think it's important that we find that edge ourselves a little bit. And anyway, I'll see. I mean, I'm going to discourage my son. I caught him the other day looking up Miley Cyrus on the internet. So that sucks. But I blame Miley and her recent twerking.
Well, one of the interesting things you bring up is how this anthology not only rips off the mask for the, you know, a lot of the external assumptions and people. I mean, I think that there's just folks out there that, you know, I've had experience with my writing. I'm not Muslim, but I do write some fiction that has Muslim characters in them. And I've, you know, they kissed, and in a workshop setting, someone was really surprised and was like, wow, that really broke down boundaries and all this. You know, that was just like, I was surprised that people are in that place. But mm-hmm. You're also talking about the internal dialogue
mm-hmm.
within the community
mm-hmm.
and how that takes shape and really gets that conversation going. And, you know, one of, you know, Aisha, as the editor, and you've been through one, you know, the female version of this, how do you see that playing out? And what have been some of your experiences with the writers, and your own piece was in the last one as well, of just putting yourself out there, not only in the New York Times and the BBC, but also to, you know, our children, parents, family, friends.
Overwhelmingly, there is a lot of support, but there is an incredible vulnerability that comes with sharing a personal story. I experienced some family conflict over that as well, more so with my mom. But the rest of the family was extremely supportive. And I do look at this, both anthologies, as a gift to the next generation of Muslim kids who are growing up, that many, some of them at least, live in ethnic or racial bubbles where everyone looks the same and practices the same. And for them to have access to the reality of Muslims and Islam in America, which is incredibly rich and diverse, for them to know that just because they may not fit in one specific area or group, it doesn't mean that they need to be excommunicated or self-excommunicated, that they can continue to have a relationship to their identity as a Muslim and to Islam as their religion, and they can bring all aspects of themselves to that to create a really rich mosaic for themselves.
And Sam, do you think you'll share your story with your children?
I think my story is reasonable and tame, and I think when my son's probably in high school, I'd be happy to let him read it. And actually, it might help open the door to the conversations, because a lot of, you know, I had some issues growing up with sexuality and desire, and we may need to open up that dialogue. So yeah, I think I would. I'd share it with them.
In a few years, though.
In a few years.
Not at the release. He's not coming to any of the release parties, huh?
He can't read anything I've written until he's in college, I think.
I think that's such an interesting point, though, because there are many similarities between the anthologies. So faith and family and marriage play huge roles in the stories, both collections. But what was different and what was strikingly different was how open many of the men, male writers, were about sexuality, which there is much more pressure on Muslim women to not be open about that or claim sexuality as their own or explore that even in writing. Whereas in this collection, with Sam's story and other stories, they're just sort of a claiming of that as the natural part of being a man in America, perhaps, being a Muslim man in America. It's sort of Muslim men bursting into three dimensions in this book. What was also striking was when there isn't space for the men in this collection to express themselves emotionally or in response to some kind of heartbreak or hurt, there were incidents of self-medication or self-harm that took place, which I personally found surprising initially. And then when I sort of thought about it, I said, well, there's no other outlet. There's no verbal communication. There's nowhere they can go to really communicate that. And so it turns inwards. And lastly, the pervasiveness of pornography as the place where many of even the Muslim men were finding out about what it means to be a man, what a relationship with a woman looks like, what sexuality means, in the absence of any context from family or friends, or even school, perhaps, of giving other or more holistic ideas of what those issues can mean in one's life and how that can impact future relationships.
Yeah, I thought it was really, there were a lot of risks taken in the writing. And I also was fascinated with how central marriage and moms were. Almost every, you know, and I think, you know, and especially in the West, there's, I feel, among men, a strong stereotype that men skirt marriage, women drive it. And all of these stories, the men were driving force behind wanting to marry in what was put on the page often. There was a very strong, and the mothers played huge roles in the majority of the stories as well. One of my favorite stories in the collection was The Mother's Curse. And I thought that story is just real sweet in how it's written and the perspective and showing the evolution of the mother's relationship, that initially she curses it, and then when he loses it, she was like, you're never going to have it that good again, you know? And so sort of the mom always is going to have the last mm-hmm. word, and the strength of the women comes through in the male's writing.
Yeah, it's a community that puts an incredibly high value on marriage. Mm-hmm. So even for more secular Muslims, marriage remains a primary goal, which we saw in the stories as well, regardless of if they're pursuing a Muslim partner or not.
Yeah, that was, it was actually kind of, just as a person that I've chosen a path of not marriage and I often distance myself, it was an experience reading story after story where that was a central drive of one's identity in success.
It's partly a huge tenet of the faith. I mean, I think there's a hadith that says that marriage is half of faith. Every wedding I've been to, right? This is mm-hmm. like the completion of your faith to get married. And then I know in my story, I alluded to one of the hadith of the Prophet, peace be upon him, he said that if you can afford to support a wife, then you should marry. And it's in order to protect your private parts, because that's where modesty, right? That's how you channel that modesty. You get married, and then you have a wholesome sexual life, and you move forward. So, yeah, marriage is a huge component of the faith.
Absolutely. And I have to say, though, my favorite story in the whole anthology was the last story, Becoming Family, and Aisha. That when I started reading it, I wasn't sure, but as I got through it, it became clear to me that it was written by your husband, and
ooh,
it's incredible. It's going to blow your mind.
It's
a beautiful, moving, just touching piece that really talks about your strength, Aisha, and I was just really blown away by it and the power of love in it and the understanding of your family. And so I just wanted to ask you how that was as a process of moving forward with your partner and having him be such an integral part of this story, and also having your story out there as part of this anthology, even though it's a male platform. It's sort of a beautiful synergy, a powerful one, but...
Thank you. I'm so glad that it spoke to you so deeply. It was an amazing experience to work with my husband, Randy, on developing his story. And it was very much a balancing act because we both went through it together, the actual experiences that he writes about around my health and his sort of, I feel like not only becoming family, but becoming a man, like really stepping up and claiming that title for himself in a very wholesome, loving, generous, beautiful way. It's a real testament to his growth spiritually and otherwise emotionally as well. So I honestly felt very vulnerable and naked on the page initially, as well as reliving some fairly difficult and challenging times between us. So I had to take a step back and really put on an editorial hat. And
so you did the edits. You didn't have Nora do it?
I had Nora do the initial edits.
Yeah.
So she did the first round, and then I did sort of second round after she had the first round, just to get a bit of distance from it. And I saw how cathartic an experience it was for him as well. These were issues around, I had a very severe illness for a long time, and we weren't sure if I was going to survive at times. And so to really witness his perspective, to sit in the quiet and read these words was just an incredibly moving, wrenching experience for me. And it gave me, I mean, I've been through it with him and I have incredible respect for him, but I think reading his words made me realize just how courageous he really is and how lucky I am to have him as a partner. And I think writing it really also brought us much closer together, even closer together, I would say. So it was a really beautiful process. And one of the reasons we chose his story to end the collection is because I think it embodies so much of our hope for the Muslim men in the community, which is that you grow spiritually and emotionally, you deepen in this relationship that you choose to explore your whole life long, hopefully.
It's an incredibly powerful ending to an incredible anthology, Salaam Love. And I think just the courage to be there and open and be part of it makes the book even more potent. So I want to just thank you, Aisha, for all your courage and leadership and creating this platform and being willing to be a part of it.
Thank you.
And just want to also thank you, Sam, for your story and your candidacy and your willingness to put it out there and your amazing writing that is both honest, light, and humorous yes. at the same time.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sure that some of our listeners would love to hear Sam's story, Randy's story, and more. How can people get their hands on Salaam Love?
Salaam Love will be available February 6th everywhere, online and in bookstores.
And will there be a blog? Like, there's the Love Inshallah. Is there going to be a Salaam Love?
Salaam Love and sort of being folded into the loveinshallah.com blog and at Love Inshallah Twitter feed. There's a Facebook page as well. We'll continue posting on all of those featuring more men's voices. It's been, all of those have been around for about 2 years now and are doing great. So we're going to continue developing them with an increased focus on male voices.
Wonderful. And the websites one more time.
Loveinshallah.com is the blog. And you can find us on Twitter at loveinshallah. And on Facebook as well.
And there will be launch events.
Yes, February 7th at CIIS in San Francisco is the nationwide kickoff party, launch party.
National kickoff yes. right here in the base. Yes.
Birthplace of Love, Inshallah. So we're coming back home to do our party and hope to see many of you there. And we will be going to Los Angeles, Boston, New York City, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia and Chicago and Atlanta.
All over. So yes. If you're listening online, you can meet up with Salaam Love in a city near you. Thank you, Aisha. Thanks
so
Sam.
Much,
thank you.